disciples said to him, "Lord, teach us to pray." How did you learn to pray? I posed this question to Bible study participants and to some of my Facebook friends, and by far, most who responded learned from their parents, especially mom. My friend JT said, "When I was faced with something difficult, the very first thing my mom would ask was, 'Have you prayed?' and asked God about it." Terry's first memories of praying are saying the rosary with her family as they rode in the car. Now, I gotta tell you, this teaching method was a stroke of genius on Terry's parents' part. Terry was one of 12 children. What a brilliant way to keep all those little hands and minds busy in the car. My friend Vincent has early memories of learning formulaic prayers. You know, the "Now I lay me down to sleep" kind, in his home. But he started moving away from the formula type when he was about 11. He wrote to me, "It was out of my inner conversation in dealing with the loss of a beloved grandmother. I found God wasn't one to be manipulated, but rather was the one who trusted me through utter honesty of thought and feeling to find the right way through life. I think it helped that the Sunday school teacher at the time modeled this in our Sunday school class, so very different from what I experienced at home." For over 40 years, Frederick Buechner has been helping to give words to the ineffable. In his book, Wishful Thinking, A Seeker's ABC, Buechner offers these words about prayer. "We all pray, whether we think of it as praying or not. The awed silence we fall into when something is very beautiful, is happening, or something very good, or something very bad. The stammer of pain at somebody else's pain. The stammer of joy at somebody else's joy. Whatever words or sounds we use for sighing over our own lives. These are all prayers in their own way. These are all spoken not just to ourselves, but to something more familiar than ourselves, and even more strange than creation." My friend, who is a skeptic and an avowed agnostic, tells me this experience of prayer is just our mirror neurons firing. A mirror neuron is a neuron that fires both when a person acts and when they observe that action in another. Thus, the neuron mirrors the behavior of the other, as though the observer himself or herself were acting. When we witness someone cry, we get choked up. So yes, I have to concede that there is a scientific explanation for what I might call simpatico prayer. But I wonder, is it not possible that our Creator caused this biological response to evolve in humans and other animals? Buechner goes on to say, "Whatever else prayer may or may not be, prayer is at least talking to yourself, and that is in itself not always a bad idea. Talk to yourself about your own life, about what you've done and about what you failed to do, and about who you are and who you wish you were, and who the people you love are and who the people you don't love too. Talk to yourself about what matters to you most. But if you don't, because if you don't, you may forget what matters most to you. Even if you don't believe anybody's listening, at least you'll be listening." Jesus tells us God is listening. Of all the Gospels, Luke has the most to say about prayer. Our Gospel comes from the part of Luke's Gospel known as the travel narrative. Jesus and his disciples are traveling toward Jerusalem, and along the way, Jesus teaches them about his destiny in Jerusalem and about what it means to follow Jesus as a disciple. In this gospel, Jesus prays regularly and at critical moments in his mystery. story begins with Jesus and prayer, and disciples' request to be taught how to pray. First, the disciples are offered a model for prayer. Then Jesus tells them a funny little parable and reassures his followers that God hears the prayers of God's people and that God will come to us in the Holy Spirit. Jesus' model for prayer is best known as the Lord's Prayer. While much can be and has been said about this prayer, two features stand out to me. First, God is addressed as Father. I don't think it matters much whether your image of the divine is masculine or feminine or even genderless. The lesson here is that we are invited to pray with the same familiarity as Jesus prayed. The fact that we can pray in such an intimate way dramatically affects the confidence with which we approach God in prayer. Second, this model is purely petitionary. The prayer contains no adoration, no thanksgiving, no confession, only five requests for God to do something. What is most important to God is that we ask God for what we need. We are taught what our real needs are and to whom we need to go for satisfaction. Five short sentences make up this prayer. We ask that God's name would be known as holy. We ask that God's plan for creation would be fulfilled. We ask that we would receive the sustenance that we need to live. We ask God to forgive us for the ways we have harmed or neglected our relationships with God and each other. And we acknowledge that loving God and loving neighbor is bound up with our forgiving others. Finally, we ask for preservation. The time of trial is not temptation, as it is as in the enticement to do evil. We are to ask for protection from circumstances that would test our faith and our belief in God. After sharing this model for prayer, Jesus told a parable that his listeners would have considered comical. But for most of us, of modern listeners and readers, the parable is just plain confusing. We need to consider how radically different our context is from that of Palestine. Today, if we were to pound on our neighbor's door in the middle of the night, in the least, we would set off their security alarm. At the worst, we would be shot. The parable makes sense only in light of the high value placed on hospitality in Middle Eastern culture. Essentially, Jesus asks, could this happen to you? Would your neighbor refuse you? The answer was, of course not. Even if the neighbor did not want to get up, eventually he would, for fear of bringing shame upon himself and his family. God is contrasted with this unfriendly neighbor who finally gets up only to avoid shame. How much more will God respond to God's children? Jesus tells us to be persistent, annoyingly even, in bringing our concerns to God. We might be tempted to assume that we have to be the path to God's door before God will open the door. But really, I think we beat the path because this is the only way God can get to us. Sometimes the walls that we have constructed around ourselves are so high and so thick, we cannot possibly see God at work in the world around us. As for me, I have decided that learning to pray takes a lifetime. The contemplative prayer methods that brought me so close to God last week may not do it for me next week. I am always learning to pray, losing and finding my way on the path between God and me. Jesus tells us, bless you, that no matter what, to keep beating that path to God's door, because the one thing you can be sure of, whether your prayers are beautiful King James English or something akin to talking to yourself or thinking good thoughts for others, can trust that even if God does not come with the answer we are looking for, God will come. And that, my friends, may just be the heart of all of our prayers. Thank you.